My name is Casey Must. I'm the owner and founder of Citizen Yoga, and you are listening to After Class. After Class is our podcast where we invite teachers, people who are experts in the field of mental health, and our community members in order to expand our mission of suicide prevention and uplifting mental health as an overall ideal and cause. Today's episode, I'm very, very passionate about. I'm really excited to share with you. It's specifically addressing body image and how we as individuals can have media literacy around how we're viewing images so that hopefully we don't feel as bad or insecure about who we are and we can build a greater sense of confidence. My guest today is Allison McAdams. I'm so excited to have her with us. She's also going to be lecturing, hopefully, for our 200-hour teacher training at some point. And we've done some workshops together. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Casey. I'm so excited to be here.
And Allison, will you just give us a little background on like who you are? I know you're in Ann Arbor, but really what you do and why you do it.
So I am by trade a registered dietitian, and I focus specifically on eating disorders, disordered eating, intuitive eating, and family feeding, all from a non-diet weight inclusive lens. So really wanting folks to have equitable care, no matter their body size, health conditions, and spreading that message far and wide.
And what led you to this particular field?
Yeah, it was a winding road. I would say, unfortunately, it's a common path for people in the nutrition field that sometimes their own background with eating issues is what drives that fascination with learning more. So I think at the time I was hoping for the next right thing. Like if I, you know, learn more about this, I'll get it right. Right. Feeding into some perfectionism I had around food and nutrition in college. I studied unrelated things in college and then went to get my master's in nutrition. And I think through that process, I realized that a lot of my beliefs around food and nutrition were wrong. And then once I started working, I realized much of what we're taught around food and nutrition is really difficult for people to apply in real life. And a lot of people were feeling really discouraged, really frustrated, and stuck in this disordered eating, dieting cycle that was not giving them anything that it promised, right? They were feeling overwhelmed, tired, run down, and hungry often. And so I think I sought out alternatives to that of what is the alternative, what can help people get out of that cycle and free up that mental space, right? That is so dominated by food, exercise, movement, body image for so many people so that you can focus on what really matters in your life.
Awesome. And I definitely will most likely talk more and more about this. I think we shared this in the workshop, but this plague of perfectionism is so woven through our entire society. And it's so detrimental. Like I find that I want to break free from my inherited perfectionistic tendencies because it really feels so binding. It wasn't just like my own, you know, body image and people's projections of my body, but also how we work and how we have relationships and how we portray our relationships. So it's interesting that you talk like sort of about how you struggle with perfectionism. I'm sure that people who struggle with eating, which I don't know, can I make this bold statement that I think we all do in some way?
Completely,
yeah. Am I allowed to say that? That we're all sort of plagued with this. So it's, I can't wait to dig deeper.
Yeah, completely. And I think that's a great point that it's one manifestation of this drive to be perfect, to fit in, to fit another mold, right? It's another thing that's sold to us of like, your life will be easier if. And unfortunately, that just leads to people putting living on hold until they feel like they can reach one more goal, right? One more kind of milestone.
That was deep into the philosophy talk that we did the morning of our workshop, which is a quote that my teacher from India uses, which is to never hook your present happiness on future acquisition. Mm-hmm. And our whole culture is designed to make us believe that the next right thing is right around the corner. And that's the thing that will guarantee your happiness, whether that's weight. It doesn't have to necessarily do with weight. Could be a house, a partner, a job, and how we free ourselves from that. I mean, that's a, maybe that we will, you know, look at that today, but just sort of starting there is a really nice place to start today.
Yeah, completely.
So can you track some of the body image culture that I don't know if it's specifically in America, it feels a little bit more Western and more pervasive. And so I would love to hear and for you to share with people about what our ideal is that we've been fed in the West.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a great point that I obviously living and working here and learning here in the US, I'm more familiar with kind of our standards, but each culture has different beauty standards, right? There are these upheld versions of what is desirable, attractive, beautiful in every culture. But here in the US, it has shape-shifted over time, but the thin ideal is what has kind of remained. And that changes from decade to decade on whether, you know, different curves are part of that for women or different musculature for men. But that is the thin ideal of just a slimmer figure. Oftentimes when we look at it, it's almost an underweight category body. And it certainly has a negative impact on women's health. That's been studied at great lengths, but also men's health. And all folks along the gender spectrum. And there's different kind of expectations along that too. But it ends up linking your body and eating with morality to a degree, right? It starts to get us stuck in that dichotomous thinking that feeds into the perfectionism, right? Of like, there are good and bad bodies, and there must be good and bad ways of eating that get us there, or good and bad ways of exercising. And so it feeds into this pattern of right and wrong. And when you mention historically kind of how we've gotten here, a lot of it backs up all the way to the early 1900s in some ways of some of the diet culture, which is kind of the culture around this of kind of how do we get these thin bodies. And a lot of that is sold to us through diets. A lot of that came from, I think it's the Protestant church, but early churches in the 1900s, where it became virtuous, a sign of self-control to, you know, control your body and seen as a way of being clean, right? Like kind of purity. And so it feeds into so many of these different expectations that get placed on us in American society. But specifically for women, that was really pushed of like being thin was virtuous and desirable to God. And so that kind of continued. There's also a lot of studies that are coming through. There's a great book by Sabrina Strings, a professor and researcher, called Fearing the Black Body. And she's done some great interviews that tie this thin ideal to really white supremacist roots. And it's really linked to racism of this way of separating white bodies from black and brown bodies, of painting curves, excess weight as a bad thing, and control, thinness, whiteness as good. So there's a history there, and I'm not a full expert on that history at all, but it's something to consider, right? Of like, what is being sold to us and who is that benefiting? Who are these body ideals for? And why are they continuing to, you know, be so pervasive in our culture?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the and I'm not sure if everybody would agree with this, not that we're looking for people's agreement or agreeability, but I do think that there is something you brought out in the workshop, and you said it just now, which I had never really thought about, which is control of eating as it is linked to morality, which is, it does make sense if you think of even Vedic philosophy, that there's, again, I don't necessarily love to use the word control in its right usage. It's really self-control, which is paired with knowledge and wisdom, not self-control that is forced, which then creates repression. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think we get lost quite a bit. But this idea that the thinner you are, the more morality you have, because it's demonstrating self-control, which I don't know if I had ever consciously thought about until our workshop together.
Yeah. It's sneaky. So many of these things are absolutely everywhere in our culture, in so many messages that we get from, you know, close friends and family, to our TV shows, to now, you know, ever-present social media. That it's hard to identify it like that. Like, it's hard to sometimes parse out what those details are, but there is something to that of feeling. I do a lot of one-on-one work with clients, and that's something that comes up, of feeling guilt and shame if you're hungry and someone else is not. Even something as simple as that, and feeling like they must have more self-control than me, or something like that. And those subtle messages, right? Especially in young people, but for all ages, it's really tough and damaging if we don't kind of unpack that.
Yeah, I actually, that's such an incredible point. Managing our consumption, I think you had mentioned this, is managing our consumption as a part of our morality, and exactly that, how it affects personal relationships. I mean, I have seen it in my family system. How food has impacted so many generations in my life, how it's affected so many friendships in my life, and how it's affected my own relationship to myself. And I really love just even breaking it down to something as simple as spending time with somebody that refuses to eat, and how uncomfortable that can feel. Mm-hmm. Or how uncomfortable that can be. And I've definitely been that person at some points in time, especially in my college years, of, you know, exactly what you were saying. When you're 20, you're trying to manage and figure out, well, where do I fit on this spectrum? How much do I fit in? How much do I belong? What am mm-hmm. I measuring up to? And so our measuring up isn't just something that is about our career or our hair, which it is that too, and how our face looks, but it's how our body looks. It's also, what do our friendships look like? And it can feel heavy, like really, really heavy emotionally for a lot of us.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I love that you bring in like these other aspects of appearance as well, because those are ever evolving and changing. I read something recently about skincare culture is the new diet culture of, you know, there's a supposed like right way to do it, and so many new things coming out all the time that are inaccessible to the majority of people. You know, it's morphing. It's just always kind of telling us, you're not good enough as you are, here are some things to fix that.
And you had mentioned that you know, body image primarily or disproportionately affects women, femmes, trans folk, people in larger bodies, people of color, people, which again damages our mental health, obviously very much damages our physical health. And so I don't want to make it a male-female conversation, but when you mention men, I definitely think men get a little left out of this conversation. I'm not sure if you see that in your field, but women are focused on, and I think, you know, we don't want to leave men, people who identify as men, men out of this conversation.
100%. And I think that's something that, like you said, it does get lost. And a lot of the research is primarily focused on female identifying folks, and male identifying folks are often left out. And there are unique pressures and unique challenges. And I think so much of it is framed as like optimizing. Like the language gets caught up in like the business world of, you know, optimization and how can you like
productivity.
Biohacking.
Right. Yeah, productivity. Yeah. It's, I mean, I sort of agree with it in some ways because I have like probably like a strange food schedule compared to a lot of people, but I often will say, like, you know, other than being pregnant, food was in the background for me. And when I became pregnant, I was like, wait, do I have this stream of consciousness right now that's interrupting my creativity for other things in my life? I've like never experienced that before. Yeah. And it's like sort of funny to think about that, but it is like productivity is deeply related to our diet culture.
Definitely. There's a lot of like just general capitalist undertones, right? Of just like, how much can you get done? How productive can you be? Can it not interrupt your work day? Right. Yeah. And don't you dare get an energy slump in the afternoon. Right. And so it's a lot of like that talk that even different diet companies prey on to a degree. Yeah.
So how do you define diet culture? Cause like, if it's like, if you have diet culture, what's in quotes normal? What's not diet culture? I don't even know if that exists in my world.
Yeah, it's just our culture at this point to a degree, right? But it's the culture around us that is equating like health and beauty to thinness and links food and eating to morality. So it's kind of that culture. And like we're saying, it's everywhere now. So it's hard to find pockets in some ways that are challenging that, but they do exist. And a lot of that exists in like fat activism and fat liberation movements. There's a lot more challenging of that. But it's in almost all of our media now. Yeah.
Yeah. And that sort of leads to, well, what is media literacy then? And how is media literacy a helpful coping mechanism for everyone to counteract messages that we've been fed from day one?
Yeah. So media literacy is the ability to take a critical eye to the media we're consuming, right? Being able to discern what is helpful, what is not, what's being sold to us here, right? Especially on social media, a lot of it is that of what's being sold, because a lot of what is going on is product placement, ads, and even if it's someone who is not selling something in that post, right, they're still trying to get you to buy the thing in their next post. So there's a lot of that going on and on TikTok as well. But it's being able to say, to look at it and not just take it at face value, of remembering, educating yourself and remembering while you're looking at things, which we're never going to be able to do perfectly, but that there are filters here, there are angles, there are what information are we getting and what's missing, right? If someone's posting one of those, what I ate in a day, right? What are we not seeing? We are not seeing their relationship with food. We might not be seeing how much or how little they're eating of the food they're showing, any snacks in between, the stress and anxiety that goes around with having to, you know, prepare and photograph and, you know, make all of your eating really palatable through the day, like visually. And so there's so much that I think gets lost there. And just being able to look at things and ask yourself just some of those questions, right? Remembering what is true and what is not, what is real, what is not. And a lot of it's trying to engage more in real life, right? Of just kind of remembering that we're only getting a snippet. when we're seeing things in the media.
One point you made during the workshop that stuck with me, and it's a question that you had posed, but this idea of asking ourselves, who's profiting from my feelings of less than?
Mm-hmm.
And so thinking about how media is profiting based on selling you your own, if you look at it from a philosophical perspective, that you are a void. And because you are of this void, you need to consume something in order to not be an empty person, an empty thing, somebody that doesn't exist well in society. It's not, of course, that any of us haven't had this thought, but what are we doing with these questions? Part of an intellect or development of the intellect is our ability to, they call it pratipakshabhavana, which is something we mentioned. And it's our ability to look at something from a variety of angles.
Mm.
And there's a work that they put out in 780 AD by Shankaracharya, where one of the verses references your ability, even in the highest, like your highest height, to look at your partner, even at their greatest beauty, as just flesh, fat, and blood and bones. So that you remember that this is just a part of, not just an illusion, but it isn't everything. And I think with media, we really get stuck in a very, I wouldn't even say a forward-facing perspective that is paralyzing. I know it's paralyzing to me. I'm very particular about what I consume on media. But no matter what, our insecurities pop up. And it's this is a philosophical conversation as much as it's a relevant modern conversation.
Yeah, that's a great point too, of like, and I might butcher this a little bit, but there is something too of the ability to step beyond of like, this body is, there's a quote by the authors of a book called More Than a Body, and I'm blanking on their names right now, but it's a great book. And one of their big quotes is, your body is an instrument, not an ornament. And I think reframing this body is like your little vessel to get through your life, right? And to like experience so much and learn so much. And it is that, right? It's skin and bones and flesh, right? That is helping you exist in your day. Like, what is your body doing for you that allows you to engage in this life you're building for yourself? And when we focus so much on the appearance of that temporary vessel, like, what is that taking from us? What could we be spending that time on otherwise? And like you said, there's not, there's no landing place where we have no insecurity anymore, right? That's going to happen. And that's not the goal, but it's being able to reframe those insecurities, like you're saying, of being able to put it in a larger context, whether that be philosophical, spiritual, all of these different things, whatever resonates with people. Yeah.
What you have referenced before to me, the Center for Media Literacy.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have some of their core concepts up, or do you remember some of them that you can talk about for our listeners to think about while in the process of consuming, which is basically all the time?
Yes. Constantly now.
Constantly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I was reading a study where, and I think it was in like 2017, so I'm sure it's more now, but the average person's consuming like 10 plus hours of media a day. And so the fact that, well, I'm not sure, but I hope some schools are teaching some media literacy now, but man, that's so much of our day.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there are 5 core concepts from the Center for Media Literacy, which can be really helpful to go through as you're looking at media. And that's that, one, all media messages are constructed. 2, media messages are constructed using a creative language with its own rules. 3, different people experience the same media message differently. 4, media have embedded values and points of view, like you're saying, looking things from all these different angles. And 5, most media messages are organized to gain profit and or power. And that ties back into that question, like you said, of who's profiting off of this, of my feelings, mm-hmm. whether they be, yeah, those insecurities, that feeling of less than, and who's gaining power. That sometimes is more insidious, but the profit and power are really important to consider. And I like the part too of it's a language with its own rules, right? This is not someone you're relating to who has any sort of ethical stake in kind of your being, your well-being. There's different rules going on in the world of marketing and media messages. So it's a whole different ballgame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those are really helpful questions for us to ask ourselves. Daily, if possible, but they become built in. I mean, that's really what it is. It's that they become built in. And I had written a blog on our Citizen blog post, I wouldn't say we're post-pandemic, but this idea of why inconveniencing yourself for community is so important. And I think that there has been a shift in the pandemic, which I have spoken quite a bit about. And this will be one of the first new episodes on our season 3 of our podcast. So I don't know if a lot of people have heard a lot of my points of view and perspective on this, but there's a promise that the pandemic created, which is, do it yourself. It's so much more convenient. And you don't need anybody else in your life because they were taking your money. And there was a loss of the positive collectivism that this is public service announcement. This is an opinion. This is my own personal reflection. Not that you don't know that, but I like to say that because I can appreciate that somebody could see this differently. But we lost that. And social media has become a vehicle for people to feel as though they are empowering themselves, but you really have no clue who you are giving your money and your power away to. Whereas when you work for, whether it's a small business, even a bigger corporation, but you know the CEO and you understand their values and what their core being and mission is, at least you are aware of who you're spending your time with, how you're giving your power away, and not disguising it as freedom, because really your participation on social media is not freedom at all. It's not liberation or some kind of innovative entrepreneurship. It's entrepreneurship that has been created by somebody so much bigger, designed to gain more power and more money. True entrepreneurship is creating a pathway for yourself, becoming a true pioneer, thinking about something differently, and like treading a path that is for the good of the whole, not the good of your name, fame, Instagram following, etc. And so it's these questions to me are not just about body image. These questions are, well, how am I leading not just my personal life, but also my career?
Yeah.
Was that too intense?
No, I'm thinking there's like so many thoughts in my head right now. I'm just like,
I can get really intense about this particular conversation that doesn't necessarily have to do with body image, but we're in the same prison and also lie that that we've been sold about body image, that we're now being sold about what I would call false entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
So it's that equally as aggravating.
Yeah. No, that's so interesting. And I haven't thought about it in that way too, about people feeling like they're doing something for themselves on social media, but you're just playing into the game, which is so funny. My partner has his own business as well. And he used to do a lot of YouTube stuff. And it is, you're feeding into the algorithm, you're playing a game, your business is based on this larger business's whims in a way. You're like really stuck in that. But it is a interesting place too, of like you said, I think of it from my perspective as part of how we need to redefine health as well, of like people, this individualism is not helping our health, right? We focus so much on individual behaviors of, you know, diet, exercise, our bodies, and research will tell us time and time again, community and connection is the number one predictor of good health and longevity. So it ties into that so much. I think about that often, of, you know, we're not focusing on that enough. And I think that's a beautiful piece of Citizen's mission of that connection.
Yeah.
Fostering that.
We recently did, we had a meeting where we audited where our revenue comes from, which again, and I was happily surprised that the lowest producing revenue system for us is Instagram. Because to me, that tells me, not that, of course, you could then reorganize yourself and say, okay, then we should put more into Instagram or whatever other social media marketing platform. But it tells me a lot about our community, that the community we built is a connected community where, excuse me, they are consuming Citizen Yoga in real time from like a real experience. Not to say that I don't want people following Citizen to become aware and use our on-demand platform, et cetera, et cetera. Those are all good goals, and we've tried to make good business decisions that impact the good of the whole. But I just thought that that was a really good aha moment of why we don't want to allocate resources to something that we also don't always agree with. And let's put resources into like email marketing and personalized marketing, where we can connect with people who really understand the value of who we are and consume it with that depth of knowledge versus just, oh, that's a pretty picture or a nice quote. So that was that was a really interesting exercise that we recently did. I feel like I'm on a little tangent, but that to say that I don't want to say I'm anti-social media. I'm just really saddened by the impact that it's had in our lives, which is sort of leads me into our next question, which is, what is the social media impact of comparison in our lives, and how is it affecting our mental health?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think so much of it ties into even just that reality that it's exposing us to so many more people than we would ever have in our true community in real life. And that can be a big challenge for our brain, and, you know, redefining our community and connection. I feel like it can mask maybe loneliness in a way of feeling like you're connected to people without actually engaging with them. I feel like there's a lot of, in a moment of any distress or wanting to numb out, reaching for that phone and feeling like you're surrounded by people, messages, and feeling that connection in like a false way that doesn't actually bring the benefits of community. It just gives you some of the negative side, right? And there have been some articles recently just even on the impact it is having on people, specifically around like vacations and things like that, and travel, like places that used to get really low foot traffic are now getting so much because they're easily photographed and shared and are beautiful.
I saw that when we went to Tulum. We used to go to Tulum and it used to be so quiet, and this past year I've never seen more people posing and spending hours on the beach with their phones. And we're really close with the people who run the hotel, and they were talking to us about it. Like, they don't even know what to do. There's a woman, her name's Eva. She's the best reflexologist, and I have like this deep soul connection to her. Like, I love her so much, this woman. And she was talking to me during a bodywork session about it, and how we stay connected throughout the year, and how sad it is. And it's, that's such an interesting point that I don't know if we've even realized yet, actually, is how it's impacting where we go, what we do, and how present we are in those moments. If we, Allison, if we shift it to body image, how has social media impacted our body image? I know we talked about the thinness ideal. Is there anything else you want to add there, or do you want to go into like what is body image and what are those components?
Yeah, so we can kind of tie the two together. But I think a big thing with social media and body image is that there's kind of direct actions that we often take due to our body image, right? We kind of end up making certain choices based on how we're feeling about our body, whether that, and oftentimes that's related to like diet and exercise. And as a dietitian, you know, that's where I spend a lot of my time. And there is just a really strong effect of being able to see all these people in these kind of ideal bodies. You're going to the grocery store with them. You're going, you're seeing their meals. You're seeing their workout routines. You're seeing all of this. And it takes us out of tune with our own body and just adds more external factors, right? Of it just adds more, I should be doing this. I should be eating like that, without ever checking in and saying like, how am I feeling? Like, what do I need? And individualizing that approach a little bit. And I think that's a big factor of, like we said, it's that if you're engaging in that perfectionism and you're seeing these quote unquote perfect bodies relentlessly and this perfect eating, perfect exercise, if you already are having disordered thoughts around eating and exercise, fueled by in part negative body image, maybe some anxiety, perfectionism, and then you go on your phone to rest and that explore page mimics that back to you, that's just adding, you know, fuel to that fire, right? Of you're just in a relentless loop of food and exercise thoughts. And so I think there's a lot there, and reports have come out in the past week that Instagram and Facebook kind of have known their impact on body image in teens, but which is not a surprise, but there's definitely really negative impacts on just seeing bodies as business cards constantly, right? Of
You had mentioned when we look at, there are behaviors associated with body image. I don't know if I'd ever like heard the terms connected to it. And then like, once you named it, I realized like I also had inherited some of these. So like this idea of body checking, I'd never heard that term before. Maybe that's really, I don't know, ignorant of me to not know that, but like body checking and something that you said that I thought was really important that I was going through in the moment, which is sort of funny, but you know, you were saying like, choose clothes that fit you. And like, cause it's so irritating to not, like there's this ideal of like what we think our size is and where we are in our lives. Man, I was like going through this, like, again, I'm pregnant for people in this moment who are listening, like my boob growth, like went from like, and oh, don't worry, everybody's telling me. So I'm aware, like everybody likes to comment on it.
Yeah.
Exciting. And I was like sort of refusing to like step into the body change a little. I went to like Victoria's Secret and they were like, okay, this is like the size you need. And I was like, I don't know if I can like emotionally handle that yet. So I'm going to get this one first and then go into that one. And how much better I felt embracing that change and not feeling so constricted. I felt so much more relaxed in that moment and not so irritated all the time. And I don't think without our workshop, I would have embraced it as quickly.
Oh, just I'm so glad
that out.
Yeah. That makes a world of difference. And I think, yeah, for anyone listening who wears a bra, like there's nothing more like when you're like feeling the digging sensation or underwear doesn't fit. Like that makes a huge difference. Yeah. I remember someone at one point telling me like, no matter what size of clothes you are, if you're wearing something that's a size or two smaller, you're uncomfortable. You're pulling at things all day. You're adjusting all day. And then all of a sudden you're aware of your body and how it doesn't fit, right? And so to go back to body checking is those behaviors of, for a lot of people, it's like touching like their belly or, you know, that area under your arm, or just kind of like checking different areas, touching those areas. Some more external things would be, you know, if you're walking by mirrors or windows, constantly like checking how you look in those things, comparing to other people's bodies, doing kind of that mental scan of like, how big is my body compared to those in the room, you know, and frequent weighing, things like that. So it makes so much sense that if we're in specifically clothes that are uncomfortable, but spaces that are uncomfortable, a lot of people notice that when they're with certain people who might bring up those feelings for them, that can, you know, make a big difference. And that's where, again, social media, if you're constantly seeing people who bring up those feelings too, that's just fueling that a little bit more. But yeah, that's, it can be really helpful to be aware of that. And I think especially I work with a lot of people who have maybe like digestive issues or even hormonal issues. And if you're like, abdomen is feeling distended or bloated, like there is nothing better than putting on a pair of pants that does not have a restrictive waistline. And people underestimate the power of that, right? Of like, so many of our clothes are not designed for comfort, and how can we take care of ourselves in the moment sometimes is, can be that simple. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how do you edit consciously? I've done this in my life, actually. I edited my people I spend my time with. How do you edit in a conscious way experiences, images, or people that tend to cause negative body image reactions for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. And again, it depends on the circumstance, their relationship to you. And with so many of these things too, as a dietitian, there's so much that like, if this comes up with someone, I push back to discussing it with their therapist as well. Those relational dynamics really need to be explored in that space. But as a dietitian, my advice would be, in real life, if there are people that you are regularly seeing and regularly engaging with, you want them in your life, it's boundary setting around the next time they make a comment around food or your body. It's, you know, there are varying degrees of gentleness you can approach that with, but redirecting, you know, constantly redirecting so they learn that's not something you're trying to talk about. Saying, it makes me uncomfortable when you make comments about my food or my body. I would appreciate if you stop. If it gets to the point, you can say, like, for us to be in relationship together, this needs to be a topic we don't address. I don't want to discuss this with you, and I'd appreciate if you respect that. And so there are varying degrees of that. On social media, it comes down to unfollowing, muting, taking a break if you need to. Sometimes it's just that space in general brings up those feelings. So, but I think, yeah, you do have to, like you said, edit a little bit of figuring out who is bringing, it's tough, but yeah, it's who's bringing value, who's adding to my life, who's leaving me consistently drained. But there are plenty of people, like we said, this culture around the thin ideal, diets, body image is so pervasive that there's so many well-meaning people who are bringing so much good in other aspects of our life, but this is kind of a way of relating. And for so many women and men in our society, this is a big way of relating, is talking about diets and the way we're eating and exercising. And so it often just does come down to setting a boundary about that and redirecting to something else.
Mm-hmm. Oftentimes when people come to their mat, I try to, and myself included, think about practice less as a transaction like, okay, I'm coming here to get this, because it really places so much stress on like whether or not I'm getting what I want from the practice versus the practice just being an offering to my own self, body, mental health, breath. So I can really relate to that. What are a few things, maybe like 2 to 3 things that people can do to promote body respect?
So a big piece is gratitude. So having a gratitude practice for in general, but specifically around your body, trying to think of what your body does for you day to day, what it allows you to do. And that might be different for different people of, you know, there can be different experiences in our body that feel really uncomfortable for us that might be hard to be grateful for, but can it be as simple as, you know, today my hands and my sense of touch got to feel that really like gorgeous fabric, or today I got to take a walk and feel the sunshine on my face. You know, today my arms allowed me to hug my loved ones, you know, these different physical things that our body allows us to do. And then for some people, in cultivating body respect and then moving towards body acceptance, some people start with parts of their body they already like, and then we can move to towards those harder parts. So, you know, if you have a part of your body that feels more positive or neutral, you can start there, and then you can move towards showing that appreciation and gratitude towards maybe areas that feel harder for you and maybe have more negative associations. And then other ways to show body respect is simple self-care. So nourishing your body, right? Trying to feed it regularly, doing movement that feels good. Or if you are tired, you can rest, and being comfortable with that as well. Hydration, hygiene, right? Like these little things just to care for our bodies, right? Of just and applying some self-compassion as well, you know, even just like giving yourself a hug, or, you know, giving yourself just some of that like love you know, desire and need. And, you know, we can give that to ourselves in many ways. So
I think also just acknowledging that, you know, simple hygiene and self-care can be really difficult. And if you are having those difficulties, like therapy is a really important part of our healing journey. Any kind of therapy is something to seek out. And the one thing that you had brought up in your lecture that I also loved, and I've been doing this actually being pregnant, which is like I prepare for conversations now before I enter a public space. So one of the questions you had mentioned to ask yourself, if a loved one or a person expressed this to me, what would I say to them? And I really like that preparation, because then I don't feel thrown off, because I prepared my reactions a little better. In the beginning, I think I was, I'm still a little crabby, but maybe a little less hormonally crabby or irritable. You know, how do I prepare for stand up? Let me look. You know, can I touch? Your boobs are big. Your belly's not big enough. Oh, that's different. You know, and I think we all go through life transformations that way. And preparing for when you go to family dinners, preparing. I used to do time limits on how long I would spend at some family dinners. Like, okay, I get 1 hour and then I will leave. Even if that's upsetting to other people. That was just a coping skill until I, you know, grew my own ability to hold my, I want to say, stress or reactivity to a level that was more manageable. So I really appreciated that question. And I've been using that as a preparation before I go out in public.
Yeah. It's so important. We are our toughest critic, and that can help so much. Just thinking of, if someone else was struggling the same way, what would I say? What would I say? What compassion would I give to them? And how can I apply that to myself? And I think, to your point too, for all people, and with women especially, bodies are going to change in ways that it can be hard to accept and that we don't talk about really at all. You know, it's kind of this weird, in the same way too that, I don't know, I think we don't always deal with change very well when people change even personality wise, right? Or kind of have set boundaries and things like that. But normalizing that for yourself, of trying to remind yourself that it's okay for my body to change and be different. And if we as a society kind of went through that and viewed bodies more neutrally, right, it would be less of a thing. It's just not appropriate mm-hmm. to really comment on people's bodies and changes the way that we do. It mm-hmm. is a very mm-hmm. uncomfortable thing. And so,
yeah,
a big lesson for everyone. Don't comment on someone's body.
Yeah.
Unless you're like, engaged in a conversation specifically about that. Yeah.
But
usually but don't.
But I think that it's if we bring it back to 2 points, one is just this higher ideal of thinness that we've been fed through white supremacy, looking at, you know, how that perfectionism has impacted our ability to love ourselves is mm-hmm. very, very pervasive. And I hope people take away, you know, you can't say here's your freedom now, but the freedom to choose a different ideal.
Mm-hmm.
And the last sort of question I have for you is, who should come and see you? So like you mentioned, you work with people in tandem, tandem with therapy. Mm-hmm. So when would I reach out to you?
Yeah. So I think if someone's experiencing stress or distress around their relationship with food, if eating and meals in general feel like a difficult time, or they feel like their thoughts are overrun with thoughts about food, that is often a sign it could be helpful to work with a dietitian. What I do is, so the therapy side will work more on like the past with food and body image. And then what I work on is a lot of pushing back on some of those messages we've been fed about food and nutrition, re-educating people about what is true, what is not, what our bodies need, and what we need to feel our best. And working through some of those, you know, body image concerns that come up real time, more coaching around that. And getting to a place where it takes up so much less brain space than it previously did. And oftentimes that means accepting maybe a different body than we were maintaining when we were under eating, under fueling, and kind of controlling our food and nutrition. And for some people, you know, weight doesn't change. And for some people it does. But yeah, if there is stress around eating and your body or exercise, that is usually a great sign to reach out to someone like myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being on here. And again, I want to integrate this conversation specifically in our 200-hour teacher training and all the work that we do so that the yoga industry can start to shift its paradigm of how it views who is good at yoga and who's not good at yoga, who belongs to yoga, who doesn't belong to yoga, and really, really change that in the West specifically.
Yeah.
And how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah. And thank you so much. This has been so fun chatting with you, and I love having these conversations. So I am on Instagram at Allison, Alyson _RD, but I'm not super active on there. But my website is my full name, AllisonMcAdams.com. And there you can learn more information about working with me. My email's on there, my phone number. But that's usually the best way to get a hold of me. Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time and what you're doing in the world. And I hope our listeners leave here feeling like excited to take on a new perspective.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Casey.